Welcome to the Compassionate Educators Show. I am your host, Marie Cooney, former school counselor, social worker, current homeschooling mama, and entrepreneur. I'm on a journey to share insights and inspiration that just might transform the way we interact with our students, our children, and our communities. I will share with you stories from the front lines while working with children of all ages and with families of all backgrounds. Join me as I weave in interviews with other remarkable, compassionate educators from around the globe as we uncover innovative ways to guide today's children on a path of empathy and joy while fostering resiliency and celebrating diversity. Whether your students or children are learning in a classroom, at home, in nature, or online, welcome to Season 2 of the Compassionate Educators Show. Hello and welcome to the Compassionate Educators Show. My name is Marie Cooney, your host, and I have with me today Batchevelt Frankel, who is an educator. She's also a fabulous podcast host and producer, speaker, author, educational consultant, and so much more. And today we are going to be talking about how to really utilize gradeless-based assessment. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's really, really nice to be here.
So I know that since the last time we spoke, so much has happened since then. And So I'd love to hear a little bit about what you have been up to, how you've been spending your time and really supporting those within your community.
Well, you know, it's been quite a time actually. And, I feel like at least I'm able to be really helpful because I've been giving workshops and courses to teachers all over on how to deal with this, how to deal with either remote learning or the hybrid learning or whatever they're trying to do to get through and do the best that they can to really engage their students, and also helping to try to plant little ideas of paradigm shifts and ways of looking at things. And hopefully that's been helpful. And all of those things that I'm talking about and teaching and coaching and all of those things are going to be helpful after this is all over into whatever else, you know, whatever that next space looks like.
And even your podcast within itself is a bit of a paradigm shift. So your podcast, Overthrowing Education, kind of takes a different spin and approach on how we view education. What was your motivation and inspiration for Overthrowing Education?
It started out really as a series of discussions that I was having with my head of school at the time, Jim Hahn from Arete Preparatory Academy. And we just talked about all of the things that we would love to see happen in education and all of the things that he was doing and we were doing with Arete and how it was growing and changing and discovering new things all the time, never sort of sitting on its laurels. And there's so much about education. There's a lot of stuff that's right, but there's tons of stuff that needs to be changed, which we've seen even more so because of this pandemic, as you know, people keep saying, and it's true, that it's like this microscope of what is wrong. It's like really shining the spotlight on all of these problems that we were having anyway, but now it was just so clear. So those were things that, you know, a lot of those topics were things that I was addressing before the pandemic, because I really believe that education can be so much better and that we're really not doing the best that we can. And we're not thinking in new ways of what could be and what should be. And so I really just wanted to help be part of that discussion and bring in other amazing educators, passionate educators, innovators to think about those things. And one of the things that I try to do on the show is we sort of tackle like the bigger issues, but then we also have like a lot of practical tools for teachers to use. And also I wanted it to be for parents so that they could understand, and even students, what great education could and should be.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And when we talked about how within the pandemic, the changes that have happened and how it's become a microscope to really see what isn't working. I know one of the things that has not been working for a very long time within traditional education is the way that we assess our students. And so for students, you know, they're anxiety is increasing because of all of the standardized tests that they're, you know, being put through the ringer every couple of months. And even for teachers feeling that they're not able to effectively and efficiently teach what is really important, because that whole idea of teaching to the test, even though we don't always want to talk about it, you know, when you're thinking about assessments and really kind of turning that on its head. I would love to hear your perspective of why the way that we are assessing students right now just really isn't working and what we can do instead to really help our students truly learn and grow in more effective and organic ways.
This to me is it's everything. It's so, so important. And I was giving workshops. My consulting business is called New Lens Ed. And I was giving workshops for years in person in those days, if you remember way back when we did those kinds of things. And I was giving these workshops for authentic and creative assessments, because it was something that I always believed was really, really important. And then when everything kind of moved remotely, then teachers were starting to really panic. I can't give my test that I've always given for, you know, 20 years or 10 years or whatever. I can't give my tests and my quizzes because, you know, with this, with the remote learning and the online, it's going to, you know, how can I do it? And I've always thought that an assessment cannot work if it's something a student can cheat on.
Right? Interesting.
So the goal to creating a really authentic assessment is to create something that not only can a student not cheat on, they would never want to, because it allows them to show off what they know in a way that is meaningful for them, that is interesting for them. And so those are the kinds of assessments that I always try to create. And the other thing is to talk about what is really the goal of an assessment, right? Like you were saying, this obsession with the standardized tests or with testing is so unhealthy, and it's not helpful. We have to redefine what an assessment is. And an assessment shouldn't be about trying to put a grade in a grade book. Assessment should be our opportunity as teachers and our students' opportunities as learners to figure out where they're at. Do they understand the content? If not, how can I help them as their teacher? How can I help them master the content? And so an assessment really, there's so much focus on summative assessments, right? The thing that we do at the end of the movement, the end of the unit or the end of the semester or whatever it is, instead of focusing on the formative assessments, those little things that we assess for even every day, checking in, making sure that our students are with us. Everything in, when you think about it in those terms, almost everything I'm doing is about assessment, right? I'm delivering content, and at the same time, almost, I can figure out if they are with me or not. And there's lots of ways to do that. And they don't need grades. Actually, in my opinion, none of it needs grades, because the grading of it is what, first of all, produces anxiety, stops the learning. If somebody is cramming for a test, then they are not actually learning the material. It also means that they never learned it, right? I have students that come up to me 20 years later and say, I remember that test that you did, test. Right? Because my tests were never tests, right? I remember that activity you did. I remember that. They don't use the word assessment because they don't know if they're not educators, they're not using the word, right? But they're like, that activity you did, that, you know, they'll call it a project or whatever they want to call it. And they're like, I remember that. And we learned about this. I mean, it's amazing to me that the things, when you do it in a way that the students remember it, that they enjoy it, that it's meaningful for them, they won't forget that material. So that's, those are my goals for an assessment. So first of all, just redefining what it means to assess, and then realizing that you don't have to grade those things, that it's not about putting a grade in a book. It's about really figuring it out where our students are at, where we are at as teachers, right? It's, assessments are really helpful for us too, because I can tell if a whole class did not get what I'm doing, you know, then it's on me. So.
Right. That's so true, because it truly is assessing, are we effectively teaching what they need to know, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And therefore also, if I don't put the whole pressure of a grade on it, then it's really useful that way, because I can acknowledge, wow, I don't think I was really clear with this. Let's try this a different way, you know, but I find also that I don't have to do that often, because if I'm engaging my students and it's a kind of a continual conversation, and I'm helping them to achieve mastery. So that's, you know, it's just a different kind of a way of looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it brings up so many questions, so many questions. And one of them is, some people think of grades as a source of motivation. So whether it's motivation for your, you know, high achievers to get that A, or, you know, other students to really reach for something as far as a grade. And we place so much emphasis on, I even think about, there's restaurants, there's who are giving out, you know, free ice creams and meals if you get certain grades, and parents will give money and gifts for students meeting certain grades. So what would you say to those who see grades as a source of motivation for students?
It definitely is a source of motivation for some students, and it's an extrinsic motivation. But to really develop learners who are critical thinkers, who will really enjoy learning, who are curious, they need to have intrinsic motivation for that. So it's sort of a short-term goal to say that about the grades, because the truth is, a person could cheat their way through and get straight A's, right? Mm-hmm. So did they learn anything? Does that mean anything? So maybe they got free ice cream or, you know, a financial boost from their parents. But what's the real lesson that we're giving them? We're showing them that the emphasis is on the end goal, which is the grade, right? Which is a false thing. Because it doesn't really always tell us that they know something, that they understand it, that they can transfer that knowledge into other situations, right? What I'm so much more interested in is seeing if my students truly understand the material, they can synthesize it with the other content, and that they can transfer it when they are not with us, you know, when they are outside of the classroom. That's really the most important thing. And if they, and that it be relevant and interesting to them, that we can spark curiosity. So it is hard to shift that, particularly for those high achieving students who, you know, depend on that dopamine rush when they get that A, right? Mm-hmm. But eventually when they see, because I've teach honors English, and the students that I had in those honors classes were used to, in other schools, you know, getting those A's. And when I stopped doing the grading like that, and I would go over, you know, I'd go over the work with them when we work on it till mastery. That's the goal. They will keep working on something. I will keep working with them on something until they master the material. And for those honor students, it was hard at first for me to say, like, I didn't grade your essay. Here's all the feedback. Let's talk about it and let's make it the best it can be. But after a while, it was fine. And it also takes away a huge amount of their anxiety. And then for those kids who have labeled themselves as C students or D students, or are, you know, where plague, you know, it totally destroys them to get these grades after grades because they don't test well, or they're so anxious about it, or they've decided that they're labeled as failures because of these grades that they've gotten previously. And so for them, it's the best thing ever because they can take all that pressure away and just learn and just enjoy learning and just be curious and interested. So for them, it's really, really helpful. But yeah, it's a tough paradigm shift. I think for parents, probably more even than some of the kids.
I was curious about that too. I mean, when you talk to parents and you tell them, yeah, you know what? I'm not grading your students' work. I can only imagine that some parents are not very pleased with that. So have you had any experiences in which you really had to help the parents see the basis for why you were going gradeless?
Well, I think, in all honesty, that if for most parents, if their kids are happy and their kids are learning and their kids are excited about learning, that's when they're not going to bother me about why did my kid not get, you know, graded on this thing that they did. I actually haven't really had any parents do that because the kids are just, you know, they're learning and they're engaged and they're happy. So they're not bothering me about, you know. Whereas when I did give grades, you know, years ago, you'd always have parents being like, why did my kid get an A minus instead of an A? Or why did my kid get a B plus instead of an A? Right. You know, whatever. And it was just like, well, let me, you know, and then I'd have to try to explain it because also even then I was doing, that's the other thing. I was doing all of these great assessments, but then how do you, you know, and I would even use a rubric and all of that stuff to try to figure out the points and to give it points. But at the end of the day, the students would do the thing. And if they didn't get the points, like it was done. So it's not like, and they didn't really care if they got the points or the grade, they weren't going to go through reading all of my comments. You know, they're just like, if I gave somebody a C plus on something and then I wrote all of these great comments that I wanted them to take in so that they could do better the next time, I pretty much guarantee that they saw the C plus, threw it away or put it away and never bothered to read through all of my comments to get better the next time. So that just doesn't really work. So that's the other thing about assessments and why I say that we should focus more on them being formative. Because if you imagine like a play, right, you're doing a big, let's say a high school play, you could say it is a Broadway musical or whatever play it is, right? There's this huge performance. It's amazing. And when the audience comes to see that performance, that's it, right? But that wasn't the first time those people did that performance. It wasn't even the second time. They'd been rehearsing that play for months, mm-hmm. and sometimes longer. They've had runs. They've had a dress rehearsal where then they were given notes afterward. You know, every time that there's a rehearsal, the director gives notes and sometimes the other people, you know, other people on the crew give notes and they work out what went wrong or what wasn't working and they rework it until it's working. And then they do that performance for the audience. So mm-hmm. we don't do that. We expect our students to just like, whatever the assessment is, it's just like, here it is, one and done, right? There's no sense of like sort of rehearsal. So I also like to do that where the student, where I'm working with the students along the way to make sure that they're going the right direction. If I could give you an example, before I started doing this, I remember giving this, I've been doing these authentic and creative assessments for a very long time, but I didn't always do it, like I said, for mastery and the way I just explained it, where, you know, you kind of check in with them. And the reason why I changed it is because I remember doing this where a student would come to me and say, but I would say, this is, you know, you kind of missed the boat on this whole thing. Like I completely missed the boat. And they'd say, but I spent 3 hours on it. Or I spent 5 hours on it or whatever it was. So I had this analogy that I would share with them. And I would say, well, if you were in New York and you wanted to get to your friend's wedding in San Francisco, and you drove for 3 days straight, but you ended up in Los Angeles. Did you make it to your friend's wedding in San Francisco? And they would be like, no. And I thought I was really clever to think of that, actually, right? Because the students understood, yeah, I really, really missed it, right? I missed a turn mm-hmm. somewhere and I went way off. But what I wasn't thinking of was, wouldn't it have been amazing if I took it to the next level and said, but hey, you might be in LA, but it's only a 45-minute plane ride to San Francisco. So get on the plane right now. Now that you know where that you went wrong and you're in the wrong space, figure out where you went right and go get yourself on that plane to San Francisco.
I mean, that really utilizes that next step approach of the growth mindset, and that you're not there yet, right? Not right. yet. You're so close.
Right.
And let's keep going. Let's
exactly. Mm-hmm. Let's keep going. Let's get it right. Let me help you get on that plane so you can get to where you need to go. Right. So that is kind of the next step. And I think that that's really important. And when you do that and you help your students to be successful, because I remember, I don't know if you ever had this in high school, but there was always that one teacher who was like, you know, doing the gotcha questions on the test, right? That were meant to mess with you.
Absolutely.
Right. And they took pride in that. I had a teacher in high school, one of my least favorite teachers, who said to us in our senior year, with pride, that he flunks at least one student a year and stops them from graduating with pride. It was horrible. And, you know, I mean, I was a really good student, but I still, it was like, what? Why would you think that was a good thing?
I still have compassion for that one student, right? That he got.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. It was so, but I think that the goal should be, if you have to do grades, and by the way, even when I was going gradeless in the classroom, we still, because it's a high school, had to give a grade at the end of the semester. So there was a letter grade given, but the students were never surprised by what that was. And by the way, I tried to make sure that most of my students did really well. That was the whole goal of it. So I stopped having C students because my students were doing the work. And they were doing well on it. And I made sure because they had to keep working on it until it got better.
Right.
So then, you know, but the students are never surprised by their grades. I never once heard somebody say, why didn't I get this? It's like, because they know all along the way how they're doing, because we are, you know, constantly communicating about it.
Yeah. And when you really focus on the mastery and you focus on the love of learning, which, I mean, that's the goal ultimately, isn't it, of education anyways. And when you focus on that, it really seems to take the pressure off of not only the students, you know, because there's that pressure typically on a daily basis of, am I doing this right? What is my grade? How are my parents going to react to the grade that I get? I mean, there's so many pieces that go along with it, but you're taking that pressure off so they can really love the process. You're taking pressure off of yourself as well so that you can really dive deep into just exploring the topic with your students and not having to put in, you know, letter grades and for every piece of paper that comes across your desk. And then you're also taking pressure off of parents even, because I know as a parent myself, there's always, even when we know behind the scenes of how this all works, there's always that feeling of, is my child doing the right thing? Are they learning what they're supposed to? And so when you take off the pressure of, you know, the expectation and the comparison and really just go deep into, is my child mastering the skill and enjoying the process? That really opens up a whole nother world of possibilities in what education could look like as well.
Absolutely. It's really, look, it's a big paradigm shift for a lot of people. But the other thing that I want to say is that along with that, the parents also need to have, you know, it has to be transparent, and the parents also can be in on it. They can also, you know, that's really, really helpful for them, because if you, they don't really need to have a grade if they know how the kids are doing. So I, right. You know, I really like to share with parents, you know, and I'll share with them, like, look at this amazing thing that your kid did. And I think that that's worth a lot. I love telling parents about how creative and awesome their kids are, you know, and as a parent, like, who wouldn't want to hear that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the fun of being a teacher, of being an educator as well, is really looking at what are the strengths of that student. What are they really doing well? What are they really, like, just loving and, you know, loving to explore? So I think that there's so many possibilities within that. So on a practical level, though, you know, if there's a teacher listening and maybe she's thinking, yeah, I really want to utilize more of these authentic and creative assessments in my classroom, I'm really resonating with this, but there's no way that my administrator would be okay with this. Do you have any suggestions on maybe different approaches that she could take to work this more into her classroom without, you know, while still keeping her job, let's say?
Right. There's so much in there. And one of the things, first of all, I would say is to start small and kind of, you know, it's sort of stealthily, you know, sneaking the stuff in there, right? And then, and also, you know, when teachers start to do this, one of the first questions, because if they're grading, is, are we going to be graded on this? So one of the things that teachers can do is, if they have to grade especially, or if they want to transition into gradeless, is to say, yes, but you're going to help me come up with what your grade is on this. So that that brings the students into the process of it. And they have to be honest, right? They're, and so a student might say, well, I, you know, obviously I should get an A. Okay, explain to me why. Show me, tell me what about this, and you may be right, but let me hear what you think, right? So then it's amazing how honest students actually really are. And if anything, they sort of go under where they really should be, where you're like, really? Because I thought that was much better than you think it is. I really like the way you did blah, blah, blah. But that's a conversation that you can have with your students. Now, if you have 30 or 40 students, it's pretty hard to have that conversation. And that's when you can use a tool like Flipgrid so that it can be an asynchronous conversation. And then it doesn't have to be like, how am I going to have this 5-minute conversation with 40 kids? Or, you know, some people have many classes with 40 kids, and so they could have like 150 kids or whatever.
Right.
So, I mean, I've had that before where I had that many students. And so obviously I couldn't have an in time conversation with each of them, but there's other ways to have sort of that conversation. That's not, you know, it can, there's many, many ways to have that kind of a conversation. But I think that, so that's one thing. The other thing is just like, what is an authentic and creative assessment, and how can you move those into your classroom? And I worked at many, before I was at RITE, I worked at many traditional schools. And so where nobody else was kind of doing what I was doing. There were some where some people were, and but sometimes I was the lone person doing this kind of work, and the school somehow seemed okay with it. They didn't seem to have such a problem with it, because, you know, the kid, they could see that the kids were learning and the kids were enjoying the classes. But some people did, they didn't take it seriously. They didn't understand that when you do an assessment that's not a test or a quiz, but you do an assessment that requires the students to do some real critical thinking, and it's done in a creative way, then people sometimes don't get how deep the assessment is, how much I'm asking of my students. That, by the way, is so much harder in many ways than taking a test, right? Which they can study for and cram for and get it over with. It's done. right? But this is asking students to actually take the content and use it in a critical thinking way, in a analytical thinking way, in a creative way. And because of that, it takes actually a lot more, which is why initially sometimes students would be like, can't you just give us a test? Because they don't really want to have to do this. But if it's interesting, and I try to figure out like, what are my students into? And how can I create an assessment based on what they're into? For example, for a couple years, I was teaching many times, actually, I've taught a Midsummer Night's Dream. And in high school, right? And one year I had students who were very into doing film work and, you know, sort of, they were more into acting and filming and they were very out there. And so my assessment involved creating this talk show that they had to do. I won't go into all the details, but if anybody wants to know, I will tell you what that assessment was. It was amazing. They had created a talk show with characters and of Midsummer Night's Dream. It was hilarious. They had to do a commercials. They did the whole thing. It was really nice. The next year, I had students who were so shy and so not interested in something like that. But for some reason, like, the people in my class loved baking and cooking. They were super, super into it. So I came up with a different assessment for them, which was called the Midsummer Night's Dreamy Dessert Challenge, where they had to come up with desserts that encapsulated Midsummer Night's Dream and the characters or whatever it was that they were focusing on. And they had to write out the recipe and explain they had to write a kind of an essay kind of a thing about why those ingredients and why that whole thing. And then they had to present it before judges. They actually had to bake it, what they created.
Oh, recipe. Wow.
And then I had a panel of judges. And those judges all wrote, extensive comments on their presentation of it, the way, the dessert and everything else. And it was so much fun. So, that's the way you kind of look at who your students are and what they're interested in. Other times when I have like tons of students and they have varying different interests, I give them lots of choices of different ways that they can present the material. And so, they might do a musical version of Macbeth or something, or they might do, I had a student who did 5 panel paintings, one for each act of Macbeth, that were absolute genius. I was able to see that she got the nuances of it. I had a student who did, she was interested in being a social worker therapist. And so I had her, she wanted to be a family and marriage counselor when she got older. And she did files for as if she were the Macbeth's marriage counselor. And so she did all of their sessions, right? They were the files of all of their sessions that took them through the whole play. And it showed me all the different things she understood about what was happening in their relationship in such a deeper way than if I just gave her a test, right? I mean, and she loved doing it. She had so much fun doing it. So those are the kinds of things that I like to try to do. And like I said, you try to figure out who your students are and then, right? So you can't just do the same thing each time, which is, it's a little bit of work for the teachers, but I'll tell you, it's a lot more fun to get those kinds of assessments than to sit there and grade, 150 tests.
I love this. I want to be in your classroom, number one. So if I could go back and sign up, because it just sounds, one, like a lot of fun, and two, we have so many students who traditional school, it just doesn't feel like the right place for them to really explore, to be themselves. I remember I've had countless students who would tell me, Miss Cooney, like, I'm not smart. I'm stupid. They would be very judgmental, critical of themselves. And when we took the time to actually explore what they loved doing, what they were really good at, and they could see, wow, I have so many gifts and strengths that unfortunately just don't come out necessarily in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And by utilizing your approach, and by the way, I love all of the different ideas that you've given us, but by utilizing their strengths, their talents, their gifts, and combining that with the content, then they can really become more empowered to be being confident that they do have something special to share and that they are intelligent. They express it in different ways, though.
Exactly, exactly. It's so important, too, because a test only really shows us who's good at taking tests. When I try to come up with an assessment, it's pretty cheat-proof, as I was saying. You know, it's mm-hmm. not. And also, if students know they're not being graded on something that they're going to work towards mastery, then what's the point of cheating, right? They kind of get
absolutely.
That. So it really helps in so many levels, and it really does help their self-esteem and their sense of knowing that, yeah, like you said, there's so many ways to express what we know. There's so many kinds of intelligences. There's so many ways that, you know, and students do it outside of school all the time. And mm-hmm. so to give them that opportunity to be their true selves and to express what they know using their passions and the things that they care about, that's, you know, that's really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I would love to give our listeners an opportunity to connect with you and get to know more about who you are and really explore your world a little bit more. So how can someone connect with you, Batsheva?
So there's lots of ways. I'm on Twitter at Overthrowing Ed, and the podcast is Overthrowing Education. So that's a great way to hear more of these ideas and, you know, be thinking about these. And I'm also on LinkedIn under Batsheva Frankel. So you can message me there. You can reach me at my website is newlensed.com. And you can hear more about the workshops and courses and things like that I'm doing. And also to reach me, you can reach me at either Batsheva at New Lens Ed or Batsheva at Overthrowing Education.
We'll make sure we get all of those in the show notes as well, so yes. Everyone can easily access yes. that and connect with you, because you have just so much wonderful, innovative work that you're doing in the world of education as well. So I so appreciate your time and being here and having this conversation today.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to speak with you again. Absolutely.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. And if you found value in this episode, please share it. We welcome more compassionate educators to the conversation, which hopefully will make our world just a little bit brighter today. See you next time.